Would the House please come to order? Would the members please indicate their presence by voting? Anyone fail to vote? Madam Clerk?
22 members present.
We have a quorum barely. Madam Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, may the record reflect that Representatives Ogun, Stevens, and Kukesh have been previously excused from the call of the House today, and I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Kapsner be excused from the call of the House from 10:34 a.m. today to 9:35 p.m. Plain Time Thursday, April 4.
Without objection, those members will be shown as excused, as indicated by the Majority Leader. For the information of the body, we have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that Representative Ogun is not hooked up telephonically. The good news is it's because he's moved rooms, an upgrade, as they say, in his medical condition, and we don't know what his number is yet. So we'll get that straightened out. Leading the invocation again today is Father Tom Moffat of the St. Nicholas Russian Orthodox Church. Would members please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray to the Lord. Lord, have mercy. We ask this day that you remember and have mercy on the soul of the newly departed Edgar Paul Boyko. We thank you, O Master, lover of mankind, king of the ages, and bestower of good things, who destroys hatred and grants peace to the human race, and who can grant peace to your servants. Instill in them the fear of you and confirm them in love, one for the other. Extinguish every dispute and banish all temptation to anger, for you are our peace. To you we ascribe glory, to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, now and ever, and unto ages of ages. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Father. Representative Scalzi, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Hudson.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread across the journal.
Without objection, that prayer will be spread on the journal. Will the clerk please certify the journal for the previous legislative day?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 79th legislative day.
Madam Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Journal as certified by the Chief Clerk be approved.
Without objection, the journal has been certified. Do we have guests this morning for introduction? Seeing none yet, at least, do we have messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other body?
A message dated April 2nd stating the Senate has passed the following and they're transmitted for consideration. CS for Senate Bill 270, Labor and Commerce, by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, entitled An Act Extending the Termination Date of the Board of Dispensing Opticians Relating to the Regulation of Dispensing Opticians and Providing for an Effective Date.
And will be referred to the Labor and Commerce and Finance Committees.
CS for Senate Bill 279, Finance, by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Authorizing the Commissioner of Fish and Game to Issue Complimentary Sport Fishing Licenses and Tags to September 11th Emergency Responders and their spouses and providing for an effective date.
It will be referred to the Finance Committee.
CS for Senate Bill 299, Finance, by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Establishment of an Additional South Central Panel to the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board and to appointments to that panel and providing for an effective date.
Also to the Finance Committee.
There are no further messages from the other body, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have communications?
There are no communications.
Reports of standing committees?
The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee has reviewed the qualifications of Sally Rue to the Board of Education and Early Development, recommending confirm Wilson and Cisna, no recommendation, Corin, Coghill, and Dyson. Vicki L. McCubbin to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, recommending confirm Dyson, Wilson, Cisna, no recommendation, Coring, and Coghill. Dr. Donna Peterson to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, recommending confirm Wilson, Cisna, no recommendation, Coring, Coghill, Dyson. The reports were signed by Representative Dyson, Chair. Finance Committee has considered House Bill 160, reporting on abortions, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 160, Judiciary, with the same title, attached to fiscal note, recommending due pass Whitaker, Lancaster, Mulder, Williams. No recommendation, Bundy, Davies, and Hudson. The report was signed by Mulder and Williams, co-chairs. House Bill 160 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 208, Aquatic Farms for Shellfish, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 208, Resources, with the same title, recommending due pass Whitaker, Harris, Davies, Lancaster, Hudson, Mulder, and Williams. The report was signed by Mulder and Williams, co-chairs. House Bill 208 has no further referral. The State Affairs Committee has considered sponsor substitute for House Bill 315, State Health Insurance for Business Nonprofits, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 315, State Affairs, with a new title, attaches a fiscal note, recommending due pass Wilson, Crawford, Stevens, State, Hayes. No recommendation, James and Coghill. The report was signed by Coghill Chair, sponsor substitute for House Bill 315, as a further referral to the Labor and Commerce Committee. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 344, increased driver's license fees, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 344, State Affairs, with the same title, recommending due pass Bundy, Whitaker, Harris, Davies, Lancaster, Mulder, Williams. The report was signed by Mulder and Williams, co-chairs. House Bill 344 has no further referral. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 438, Disabled Veterans License Plates, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 438, State Affairs, with the same title, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending due pass Wilson, Stevens, James, Fate, and Coghill. The report was signed by Coghill Chair. House Bill 438 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 443, Tattooing and Body Piercing, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 443, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, attaches a fiscal note, recommending due pass Roeckberg, Meyer, Hayes, Crawford, Cott, Halcrow, and Murkowski. The report was signed by Murkowski Chair. House Bill 443 has no further referral. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 455, Municipal Taxation of Agricultural Land, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 455, CNRA, with a new title, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending due pass Scalzi, Murkowski, Meyer, Curtula, and Morgan. The reports were signed by Meyer and Morgan, co-chairs. House Bill 455 has no further referral. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 510, Commercial Motor Vehicles Regulations, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending due pass Massick, Scalzi, Wilson, and Coring. The report was signed by Coring Chair. House Bill 510 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
The House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs has considered the following: Colonel Gene Ramsey, the Alaska Air National Guard Brigadier General; Colonel Jim Robinson, Alaska Air National Guard Brigadier General; Colonel Tim Scott, Alaska Air National Guard Brigadier General; and Colonel Jim Welch, Space and Missile Defense Brigadier General, and recommends confirmation: Massick, Green, Murkowski, Hayes, and Chenault. The report was signed by Chenault Chair. The House Special Committee on Education has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 11, Finance, Compulsory School Attendance, recommending due pass Guest, Porter, Wilson, and Bundy. No recommendation, Green. The report was signed by Bundy Chair. CSSB 11 Finance has a further referral to the HESC Committee. There are no further reports of standing committees or special committees, Mr. Speaker.
Introductions of resolutions or citations.
citation commemorating National Be Kind to Animals Week, May 5th through the 11th, 2002, by Representative Meyer, honoring William Cotton by Representative Berkowitz, honoring Alan Sanderson by Representative Meyer, honoring the Service High Rifle Club by Representative Meyer, honoring Brigadier General Douglas M. Fraser by Senator Lehman, honoring William Jardell by Senator Green, honoring East Anchorage High School Girls 2002 Class 4A State Basketball Champions by Senator Davis, honoring Kevin Baker by Senator Davis, honoring Bernard Gostein by Senator Davis, in memoriam Marge Dube by Representative Berkowitz, in memoriam David DeLeese by Representative Berkowitz. There are no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Do we have bills for introduction?
There are no bills for introduction.
That brings us to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's agenda?
House Bill 332 by Representative Bundy, entitled An Act Extending the Termination Date of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault and Providing for an Effective Date. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 332, Judiciary, with the new title, attached three fiscal notes, having no recommendation, Berkowitz, Meyer, Coghill, Ogun, James, and Roekberg. The report was signed by Roekberg, Chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 332, Finance, with the new title, recommending do pass Bundy, Harris, Croft, Lancaster, Hudson, and Williams. No recommendation, Davies. The report was signed by Williams, co-chair. There are two committee substitutes.
Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 332 with a new title be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, we have the Finance Committee substitute before us. Do we have amendments?
I have no amendments, Mr. Speaker.
Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Bill 332 Finance be considered in gross advance to third reading and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third reading. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
CS for House Bill 332 Finance, entitled An Act Extending the Termination Date of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Relating to the Council's Duties, Placing the Executive Director and Staff of the Council in the Exempt Service and Providing for an Effective Date.
Discussion. Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is one of our usual bills that we address to speak to sunset clauses, and it will extend the sunset date on the council. There have been some concerns. There's been an audit of the council, and in an attempt to partially address those concerns, this bill also would change some of the staff to an exempt position. The reasoning there was when a new director is hired, it would be appropriate to allow that director, if they choose, to change some of their staff people. As it is, currently exists, they are not able to do that, and that was the reasoning behind changing to exempt.
Representative Bundy, any other discussion? Ready for the question? Question before the body is the passage of committee substitute for HB 332 Finance. Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
36 yeas, 0 nays.
And so committee substitute for HB 332 Finance has passed the House. Madam Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the bill be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Would the clerk please brief at ease? To order. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's agenda?
House Bill 390 by Representatives McGuire and Curtula, entitled An Act Extending the Termination Dates of Certain Activities and Salmon Marketing Programs of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and of the Salmon Marketing Tax, expanding the allowable use of that tax for the Salmon Marketing Programs of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute relating to the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute Salmon Marketing Committee and providing for an effective date. The House Special Committee on Fisheries considered the bill, attached a fiscal note recommending due pass Dyson, Coghill, Scalzi, Curtula, Wilson, and Stevens. The report was signed by Wilson and Stevens, co-chairs. The Resources Committee considered the bill, recommending due pass Stevens, Green, McGuire, Fate, and Scalzi. The report was signed by Scalzi, co-chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommending due pass Whitaker, Harris, Croft, Davies, Lancaster, Hudson, Williams. No recommendation, Bundy. The report was signed by Williams, co-chair. There are no amendments, Mr. Speaker.
Madam Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 390 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third reading. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
House Bill 390, entitled An Act Extending the Termination Dates of Certain Activities and Salmon Marketing Programs of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and of the Salmon Marketing Tax, expanding the allowable use of that tax for the Salmon Marketing Programs of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute relating to the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute Salmon Marketing Committee and providing for an effective date.
Discussion. Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my honor to present the best bill we've seen so far this year, HB 390. Mr. Speaker, we all know that a glut of farmed salmon worldwide is threatening Alaska's wild salmon market, and I would venture to say that none of us here in the room like it. Well, ASME, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, is hard at work trying to fix that, trying to convince the rest of the world and the rest of the United States that they should be consuming wild salmon from Alaska as opposed to farmed Atlantic salmon. In 1993, this legislature authorized ASME to collect a 1% salmon marketing tax on fish to help them market Alaska salmon in domestic markets. This bill before you today would extend the sunset for the second time. The last time it was extended was in 1998. And allow ASME to continue both collecting raw salmon data as well as collecting the 1% salmon marketing tax. Mr. Speaker, as you can see, the bill is mostly procedural in nature. There is one substantive aspect of the bill that I've incorporated, and that's a policy change to lift the restriction on domestic marketing only and allow ASME to market to international markets. My reasons for it are quite simple. The first is philosophical, in that I believe that if we give them ASME a tool, we ought not to micromanage them here in the legislature. But it's also practical in nature. ASME stands to benefit from federal matching funds if we lift this restriction on domestic marketing and allow them to venture into the international arena. In fact, one estimate shows that they stand to bring in $12 for every $1 that they collect. So those are pretty good odds, Mr. Speaker, and we'd like to allow ASME the opportunity to do that. And then the final reason, certainly we know that the European market is emerging. They're starting to take an interest in Alaska's wild salmon, and Japan is a market that we can never continue to ignore. So with that, I'd ask the member's support. Thanks.
Representative McGuire, any further discussion? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I rise in support of this legislation. I believe that this is the only glue in this far-ranging statewide industry. The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute essentially is a generic marketing entity that markets for the product, salmon product, as well as all other seafood products worldwide. And when this was put on the books some years back, I had the opportunity to carry the legislation that originally started this arrangement here. The fishermen and women out there, the harvesters, agreed to pay this 1% tax. This is their tax for their purpose, and I believe that it really is the only thing right at the present time with this industry that is really flopping back and forth under a tremendous amount of pressure from the farm salmon competition that's coming from subsidized farms in Norway and Chile and even down on the British Columbia coast and places like that. For our wild salmon that are located in through the entire coastline of Alaska, this is an important piece of legislation, I believe. It's one they pay for themselves, so I'd urge everyone to vote for it.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Representative Wilson, and then James.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that we really need to take advantage of every avenue that we have at our disposal to help the commercial fishing industry. This is one of many things that we can do, and so I highly recommend this and urge everyone to vote for it.
Representative Wilson. Madam Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to rise briefly to give my support for this piece of legislation. I spent a couple of years as a legislative member of the ASME board and was able to get a really good education on this issue, and also admire the amount of dedication of the members of the board. I think the one change that was made is also a good change, because I believe that we ought not to stifle these people from being able to do their job, and so allowing them to be able to use some of these funds for the international marketing, I think, is a very good move, and I appreciate it and would urge everyone to support it.
Representative James. Representative Lancaster.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, rise in support of the bill. I would only hope and maybe clarify that I hope there's no duplication of efforts between ASME and international trade, and hope that the two can work together cooperatively to make this happen. Thank you.
Representative Lancaster. Any further discussion? Ready for the question. Question before the body is the passage of HB 390. Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
37 yeas, 0 nays.
And so HB 390 has passed the House. Madam Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the bill be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Would the clerk please read the next item?
CS for Senate Bill 343 Resources, entitled An Act Clarifying the Term Best Technology Required for Use in Oil Discharge Prevention and Contingency Plans, affirming existing Department of Environmental Conservation regulations defining best technology and oil discharge prevention and contingency plans approved under those regulations and providing for an effective date in third reading.
Discussion. Representative Dyson.
Thank you. I suspect my remarks will have little effect here, but I walked home last night to past an illustration. It talks about, kind of speaks to what we're doing here. I've spent most of my life fixing things and making things work. And I walk by the four spill prevention barges that are cleanup barges that are tied up to the marina where I'm living. And the mechanics were there working on them. And these are very nice pieces of equipment, the four barges and the four skiffs. And I suspect no expense was spared in purchasing them, and three out of the four skiffs won't work. And they had the latest and best technology, and in fact, the bushings and the pumps expanded in salt water and forced the impellers up against the housing, and they're jammed. The one that's running is eating the housing because the impeller is rubbing on it. And I watched the guys that were trying to launch them trying to make the winches on the davits work. And one of them had a 24-inch Johnson bar or socket set bar. And he seemed a fairly husky young man, and he was barely able to make the winch work. And it's just an illustration, I think, that the most exotic technology is not the most appropriate. In the early days of the space race, the Russians beat us hands down because they used a simpler technology that was far more reliable, and we see that in some of you have been around, maybe some of you had a chance to fly in them, some of the Russian bush planes that are over here in Alaska now, they're very robust, and they almost always work, and they're low maintenance, and kind of work in bush applications, certainly that's what we want. We want equipment that certainly is the best that's available, but it's appropriate in that it is easy to maintain and will work after long times in storage and so on. And that is often not the best of the latest gee whiz kind of technology that comes onto the market. I think that we can trust the folks in the administration to write the regulations and do the kinds of inspection and make those decisions for what's appropriate, even though it might not be the latest best thing that's on the market. My experience with containing oil spills is relatively small, a lot more experience with fighting fires, both afloat and on shore, and time is always of the essence. If you can get your equipment and your crew to a fire or a spill minutes earlier, that makes a whole lot of difference than having a lot more equipment hours or days later. And certainly that's, I just saw an illustration last night where the very best equipment is absolutely no good because it won't work. And it can be made to work, but so I think what we're aimed at, all of us, is having the best appropriate technology, which means technology that works and serves and is easily maintained and survives well in storage. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dyson. Representative Croft.
Well, I think the prior speaker is right in what we all want. We all want the best technology that works for Alaska to be required for oil spill prevention. It doesn't. The bill doesn't say, the requirement doesn't say the latest, the gee whiz, the other words he uses. It says the best. And the criteria that you can use in best is the best appropriate for our environment, for an Arctic environment, or the best in a systemic way. But let's, again, Mr. Speaker, be clear about what we're doing here. We're getting rid of that requirement of the best. We have had forever a floor, can't go below these performance standards, and a goal. Let's keep Alaska at the best available technology. And we're eliminating that here today. I think it's a major depressing step backwards in the vision we have, the vision we really had since 80, but it certainly had since the spill, of what we want to demand in terms of spill response. We're getting rid of the goal. We're keeping the floor, meet these performance standards, but 10 and 20 and 30 years from now, when there are different systems that work in Arctic environments to clean up a spill better, we'll have no requirement that those be implemented in Alaska. The North Sea or any other place can have better systems, and we've just let ours fall further and further behind. Why would we want to do that, Mr. Speaker? It seems particularly unfortunate to be doing it at this time, as the National Congress debates whether they think it's appropriate to open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, for us to be retreating from a major protection for our marine environment, because the oil that ANWR would bring forth would come through that pipeline and would go out on ships through that environment. And as we try and convince the rest of the nation, sometimes the world, but at least the rest of the nation, that we can do this responsibly, to step this far back and say we are no longer going to insist that we have the best protection, is a horrible mistake. It's a mistake for our environment, but it's a mistake for our goals for economic development for this state as well. Make no mistake about it. This will be used on the national level, and it will be used to our detriment. We should not do this to ourselves, to our environment. We should have higher goals than this. We should have, continue to have, the dream that they put in place, dream it too strong, the goal that they put in place 20 years ago and 10 years ago, that Alaska will continue to be the best. And as these technologies evolve, we will continue to gradually upgrade. We should not take this step back, even if you don't buy the argument, Mr. Speaker, that we should have this protection for Alaska, Alaska's environment, even if you don't think we should be the best in this area. I'd urge you to consider whether you really want to do this at this time.
Representative Croft. Representative Cotullo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with the previous speaker. I think that Alaskans demand the best. I think that they deserve the best. And I think that this confuses what the best is really going to be, and I think that that's why the court overturned the previous regime. I think that Alaska does have good planning standards, and I think that the industry and that the agency that's responsible right now for monitoring and being certain that they're upheld is doing a very good job. But here's the rub. I started thinking about this last night. I don't think my mother's going to like this example very well, but this reminds me of when I was a little girl. And I would ask my mother, well, why is that so? Why are you doing that? Or why are you making that decision? And my mother would turn around and say, because I say so. And it usually worked. I usually went the other direction. And currently, I believe that the department that says so is doing a good job. I think that they are enforcing. But, you know, Mr. Speaker, that really isn't the right definition of the best. And I think that we need to think about the future, and we need to maintain a standard that has some meaning in it rather than a circular way of coming about it. So for that reason, I can't support the bill. Thank you.
Representative Curcilla. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, as we have discussed yesterday and again today, the bill really says best available technology, which is appropriate and effective, and that's what this bill is all about. And the person or people that I would go to find out what is the current best available effective technology are the experts that use it, those that enforce it. Not a member of this body or other people from the public who say, but I read something just the other day that somewhere in Norway they have a better technology, or they have it in Guatemala or some other place, but it's not effective in the North Slope. Most people that are watching those activities, to me, are obviously the most reliable. If I had a problem with my tooth, I believe that there's only one member in this body that I would go to. I would go to somebody who is an expert. That's what we're relying on. If we say on this floor that we don't have confidence in our people that we designate as experts, then this state is in a real state of a problem, Mr. Speaker, because we do that in all regards. We have this same agency determine whether certain foodstuffs are adequate and are safe for us to eat, whether certain beaches are safe to do any kind of shellfish-type harvesting, and then to turn around and say, well, we have to take their regulations and put them into statute. When you talk about circular, Mr. Speaker, that is circular. I'm certain that most of the people on this floor have heard the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And not until I got down to the legislature did I hear a term that if it ain't broke, fix it till it is. And, Mr. Speaker, I think what the amendment yesterday and some of the discussion that's gone on the floor today is one of those things of trying to fix it till it's broken. And so, Mr. Speaker, I would suggest and ask that all the members would approve the bill as written.
Representative Green, any further discussion? Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I've noticed a certain fondness in this body for sending messages. Well, we're sending a message with this bill. Because even a perceived retreat from the high standards of best available technology will be used against us. And I'm more convinced than ever that opening Anwar is the right thing. I've watched the events unfold in the Middle East over the last couple of weeks. I've heard the OPEC nations threaten to use an oil weapon against us. And I'm more committed than I ever was to make sure that Anwar gets opened. But voting for this bill is a vote against opening Anwar. A vote against this bill is a vote for opening Anwar. You take the argument that Alaska's retreating from the best available technology in any fashion, and that has credence at the national level. Mr. Speaker, we will be sending a message today. I don't think it's the message we want to send. It's inconsistent with other messages that this body has sent, and I'm sure we'll continue to send in the future. We don't have the luxury any longer of debating our issues, unaware of the repercussions outside of these halls, outside of this state. What we do today will surely echo in the halls of Congress in the weeks to come. And I hope we make the right choice, not just the right choice for Alaska, but the right choice for opening Anwar. And let's vote against this bill today.
Representative Berkowitz. Representative Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, if I thought that this vote would change the hearts of the preservationists back east, I would vote no. I would get up and talk and do everything I could. But I've seen those preservationists here in Juneau and in Alaska work to shut down a timber industry. And we did things that they wanted to do. And they kept going, asking for more. Now they're going after the fishermen. So I don't think that they're going to listen to anything, Mr. Speaker. I would urge that we vote yes on this bill.
Representative Williams. Representative Sisnip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I guess I really need to say something about the last comment. And I guess I haven't met those people that were mentioned. I've lived in Alaska now for more than 35 years, and I don't know of groups that are going after and different industries and trying to destroy them. I know of people who have very strong feelings about the different resources in Alaska, and they have their, and we each have our different views, and if we do the wise thing, we'll share them. And my understanding of our job here is that we are here to protect and to have wise use of the resources of Alaska for the Alaskan people. That's why I'm here, is for Alaskan people. I want to make positive that we make sure that we don't waste the resources of Alaska. And I believe this bill just simply does not set up an environment so that we will protect Alaska's resources wisely. I will vote against it, and I certainly hope that the other members of the body do. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sisna. Any other discussion? Are we ready for the question? Question before the body is the passage of committee substitute for Senate Bill 343 Resources. Members may proceed to vote. Will the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
29 yeas, 8 nays.
And so committee substitute for SB 343 Resources has passed the House. Madam Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the bill be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause has been adopted.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Jewell.
I'd like to serve notice of my reconsideration of my vote on SB 343.
Reconsideration has been given on SB 343. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to bring up reconsideration on 330.
Motion for the body is to bring up reconsideration on HB 330 without objection. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move to go back to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment, that being amendment number one, which is on members' desk.
There is objection. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I'll ask for a little bit of latitude since this is a very small amendment. It only changes, deletes three letters and adds four letters, Mr. Speaker. It's the smallest possible amendment one could imagine. Mr. Speaker, seriously, what this amendment does would do if we were to adopt it would be to change acting under the influence of alcohol to driving while under the influence. And what it would do is focus the effect of the bill on the issue that brought the bill to us, which is carnage on the highways, which is driving while under the influence, and the issue of the provision of alcohol to minors who then go out and drive and cause an accident. That is the issue that was celebrated in the newspaper, that was brought to our attention, and that's what the MAD group is focusing on. And I think that if we were to focus the bill on the issue in this way, then it would remove the unintended consequences that I spoke of yesterday, and then I could support the bill. Thank you.
James Davies.
Briefities.
Would the House please come back to order? Is the objection to moving back to second for the purposes of a specific amendment maintained?
Mr. Speaker, in the interest of open debate, I will remove my objection.
Thank you, Representative Rochberg. We are in second reading for the purposes of the discussion of the amendment number one. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
There is objection to the amendment. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that it's pretty clear what this does. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the merits of the amendment very much. I was troubled yesterday what I thought were the unintended consequences. This would bring the bill back to focusing on the issue that really brought this bill in front of us. And Mr. Speaker, I think if you look through the backup in the packet, every single message that we have in there deals with driving. Every single one. That's what the concern was. If we were to adopt this amendment, that would focus this bill on that concern exactly. So I ask members to consider that. And I appreciate the opportunity to discuss it.
Representative Davies. Representative Dyson and then McGuire.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I respect and appreciate the intention of the amendment. I just want to offer a different perspective. In the years that I have lived in Alaska and paid a lot of attention to what goes on in boating, the single common denominator for most of the accidents, 75% or so of the accidents we have with boats, including the drownings and so on, is two common denominators: lack of personal flotation devices, i.e. life jackets, and alcohol. And alcohol in as a component of boating accidents is just a huge and very significant factor. And the same is true with the accidents we've had operating four-wheelers, three-wheelers, and snow machines. And alcohol plays a significant factor in that. And then there's the addition with where there's been less carnage, but with firearms accidents. You all helped me welcome my my firstborn, who was sitting in the gallery here yesterday. All of my three daughters started fishing with me when they were 13. And probably once a season in the 25 years that I fished, I crawled off my boat and onto a tender and told the skipper, get that drunk off the crane. I'm not going to risk the health and injury of my kids and my crew when you got somebody that's impaired running a crane. All of you have been around operating heavy equipment and machinery, you know how accident prone that is. You're lifting loads and have powerful machines. You don't want somebody there that's impaired. And I've switched tenders and people I sold to when they wouldn't take care of making sure the people who are operating equipment had all their faculties about them. And so I appreciate the fact that the things that get on the headlines to talk about folks, and particularly here we're talking about underage folks who are impaired, but once you get out away from the highway network, the risk is still there, and I disagree with this limiting what we're trying to accomplish here to only having to do with vehicles that drive on the highway. Thank you.
Representative Dyson. Brevities. Further discussion of amendment number one.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hudson.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to offer a friendly amendment to the amendment. If I might, instead of using the word driving, put the words operating motorized vehicles or watercraft in the same place.
Could the House please stand at ease for another moment? Representative Hudson, would you restate your amendment to the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I've revised it under consultation. Mr. Speaker, the words I would like to use in lieu of driving would be operating motorized equipment, firearms, or watercraft.
The motion before the Representative Massey.
Mr. Speaker, can we revert back up to the calendar?
Not at this moment. We're going to get this done.
Thank you.
Then we'll go back there. We're addressing amendment number one, and the motion is to amend amendment number one by deleting the word driving and replacing that with operating motorized equipment, firearms, or watercraft. Does the body understand the amendment? Is there objection? There is objection. Motion before the body is the amendment to the amendment that I just described. Is there debate? Representative McGuire.
Mr. Speaker, I'll be brief. I know we're trying to wrap things up here. I rise in support of the amendment to the amendment. I think it makes the bill a better bill. One of the concerns that I had in reading the bill initially is constitutionality and a little thing called vagueness and overbreadth. And I think this it gets right to the heart of what Mothers Against Drunk Driving have been speaking about, what the sponsor has been speaking about, the backup materials in our packet. It specifies what the action is, it defines it clearly, and I think it makes it a better bill.
Thank you, Representative McGuire. Any other discussion? Ready for the question. Question before the body is the amendment to amendment number one. Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
27 yeas, 10 nays.
And so the amendment to amendment number one has passed the House. Brings the amendment back before us, and before we go to there, Representative Masick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. can we revert back up to the calendar introduction of guests?
Without objection.
Thank you. It's very rarely, Mr. Speaker, that I have a constituent here in Juneau. In the Taylor Gallery, I have one of my best friends and good supporter from up in the northern end of our district, and her mother has been involved in politics for a long time, and a lot of you probably have heard of her name, Rose Palmquist, and her daughter, Kelly Ladary, who is elected to our borough assembly, is here in Juneau, and I'd like the body to help me give her a warm welcome. Thank you.
Brave it is. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also, while we're under introduction of guests, if I may, I have two friends from the Kenai Peninsula, parents that are down here to help us get educated on education. We have a tongue twister, Casey Cooper from Kasilof, is here. And also an old friend of mine, Eileen Bechtel from Homer. Please help me welcome them to Kenai.
Representative Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative twice to my right over here has been doing some work for me. But anyway, I'd like to also, under introduction of guests, I'd like to welcome here from the Boy Scout Troop 624 from Cordova. I'm trying to read this writing. I hope I do this read these correctly. But first, Jeff Ikey, James Curran, John Curran, Leif Stavik, Galen Van Sant, Casey Kramer, Tim Fisher, and I think it's probably their sponsor, but Joan Songer is the way I think of it. But anyway, also, Tim Fisher, it's his 15th birthday today, so help me welcome all of them to Juneau.
Any other guests? Turning then to the discussion of Amendment Number 1 as amended, Representative Rookberg.
Mr. Speaker, the member from the UAF indicated that his amendment was very clear about what he was doing. Well, now we've had an amendment to the amendment, perhaps that helps clear it up a little bit. But by doing so, by adoption of the amendment, we have narrowed the focus and scope of this legislation. Mr. Speaker, I don't mean to, the intent of this legislation is to prescribe irresponsible actions, that of furnishing alcohol beverages to minors. I think all of us, get a little nervous about this because we've had instances of what we call hosting, where we participated in something that might be breaking the law, but we used our best judgment to do the right thing. Mr. Speaker, this is about responsibility and alerting people to their responsibilities when dealing with an alcoholic beverage. And that's the entire intention here, where the genesis of this bill came out of a situation which is extraordinarily tragic. 4 lives were lost. But, Mr. Speaker, by narrowing it to watercraft, improper use of firearms, and driving, if you will, We leave out a whole category of instances and violence that could cause the statutory serious injury that we have in this bill, as well as death. And that's what we're talking about. Moreover, Mr. Speaker, we already have a Class C felony right in this particular current legislation. That's for a second prior. If you do this twice, you are guilty of a Class C felony. So all the bill does is say, if you do this, and there is extraordinarily serious injury, and not just a broken arm that was mentioned on the floor yesterday, and or death, you're going to be charged with a felony. I think the courts have the liberality to look at the fact patterns here and to see what the conduct was. But, Mr. Speaker, the real point here is, what about domestic violence? What about child abuse? What about arson? What about ATVs? What about harassments and harassing of things? What about assaults? I mean, all these things now are excluded. It's okay to do this. I mean, I only just gave him a beer, Your Honor. Well, that's not adequate for us for state policy. I'm against this amendment. I think it narrows the bill too much. And quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, I think it exempts certain areas of the state that might not be exempt otherwise. So I'd ask for your vote against this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Rupert. Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you very much. Well, I appreciate the generosity of the Judiciary Chair for allowing us to go back to second to debate this. To answer some of his concerns, ATVs would still be covered. I would consider them to be motorized equipment. If an individual, a juvenile, were to commit arson, I'm sure that juvenile would be prosecuted under the arson statutes. The question has to do with whether there's a nexus between, a linkage between the providing of alcohol to the juvenile and the juvenile then committing an offense. And by narrowing the scope, we help to ensure that there is some kind of connection. We say that there are some categories of equipment, motorized equipment, firearms, watercraft, that are just inherently dangerous, and we recognize that you have to take extra precautions when you provide alcohol to a juvenile under those circumstances. So if a juvenile commits criminal activity, that juvenile is always subject to charge. The problem results that the instance of a broken arm, if a juvenile, for example, is provided with a couple of beers, they're out roughhousing with a friend, negligently break that friend's arm or cause stitches to be inflicted, then the person who provided the alcohol, whether it's a juvenile or an adult, could be held as a felon. And that seems to me a bit of an overreach. And people say, well, the prosecutors would never do that. But we've in this body dealt with instances where we had to correct a statute earlier this year where people were charged with felony eluding because they didn't use their turn signals. So I, having been a prosecutor, appreciate the trust that people have in prosecutorial discretion. I think that oftentimes prosecutorial discretion is well exercised, but sometimes there are other agendas that are part of a prosecutor's discretion. And I think we ought to ensure that when we pass laws that have a criminal impact, we do so with clarity. And this amendment makes the statute clearer. It focuses it on the type of conduct we're trying to prevent, and I would encourage the body to support it.
Representative Berkowitz. Representative Davies.
Thank you. In wrap-up, I guess. Again, I also appreciate the Judiciary Chair's willingness to allow us to go back to debate this. And he's absolutely right. This does narrow the scope, and that's exactly why I offered the amendment, and that was my hope that we would do that. And I think it narrows the scope in an appropriate way. These are the kinds of activities that people reasonably should know that they need to take into account if they're going to, you know, if they do provide alcohol to a minor. And there's some reasonable expectation that they would drive or operate a motor vehicle or have equipment or have access to firearms. Those are things that we really should be sending a message. You ought to be awful careful about that circumstance. And those rise to the level, I think, of a felony concern. My concern is that there's a whole raft of other things that we can't really define very well if we leave it as broad as it was, where I don't think it would rise to that felony concern. And so that's why I think narrowing it in this way is appropriate. And urge the member's support. Thank you.
Representative Davies. Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm coming late to the debate. Having said that, it appears to me that there are two bars associated with the individual who provides alcohol to a minor being charged with a felony. The first is that the person providing that alcohol does so with criminal negligence. That's a relatively high bar, I think. I'm entering into a dangerous ground here because I see my attorney friends all shaking their head. And
it's a good debate then, because perhaps they can clarify to me why, if it says a person acting with criminal negligence, which appears to be a relatively high bar, is not a relatively high bar. So I look forward to the answer relative to that. But then assuming that that is a high bar or a medium bar, or maybe even a low bar, I don't know. It's a bar of some kind. And for those who stand before the bar, perhaps you could explain that to me. And so we've stood before one bar, and now we're standing before another. That other bar being that the person who receives the alcoholic beverage negligently causes serious physical injury or death. And so there, too, is another hurdle that has to be crossed. And I really wonder why we are so concerned about protecting an individual who is doing something that is illegal in the first place. And if the individual provides alcohol to a minor and the minor does serious injury or death to another individual, I don't think it's unreasonable that that first individual act responsibly in the first place and not provide alcohol, but having assumed that they did and a serious injury or death has resulted, what's wrong with we as a policymaking group saying it is our policy that if you do that, you may be charged with a felony? So I speak against the amendment and look forward to an answer relative to the bar discussion.
Representative Whitaker. At the bar, Representative Brickowitz.
Well, I'm not sure which bar my friend has been at. But if I could just read a little bit from the criminal statutes, it might prove enlightening. Two definitions, the first of criminal negligence.
Without objection.
And the second of serious physical injury. Criminal negligence, a person acts with criminal negligence with respect to a result or to a circumstance described by a provision of law. Other legislators wrote this. We didn't do this. Defining an offense when the person fails to perceive a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur or that the circumstance exists. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that the failure to perceive it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that a reasonable person would observe in the situation. There are four standards intent, I guess is what the word escapes me. You can either do things with strictly liable where you have no mental state. Negligence is the lowest mental state. Reckless is the next highest, and specific intent or intent is the highest level. So it's down, it's the lowest you can be at without when you're thinking at all. Serious physical injury means physical injury caused by an act performed under circumstances that create a substantial risk of death, or physical injury that causes serious and protracted disfigurement, protracted impairment of health, protracted loss or impairment of the function of a body member or organ, or that unlawfully terminates a pregnancy.
Ms. Minority Leader. Representative Croft.
Mr. Speaker, when the prior speaker was going to read the definitions of the statute, because I've never found them enlightening, and it didn't seem like they would help clear up anything. They never have for me. The two hurdles, bars, my friend from Fairbanks talked about, providing with criminal negligence. So it isn't even just intentionally providing. That's the situation that's most familiar to me, I guess. When I was growing up and coming back home from college, my neighborhood friends would go over to a friend's house, and occasionally, so let's have a party for those that have come back. We're 20 years old. We feel like we're adults, even if we're not quite. He was very serious that we couldn't drive afterwards or do any of the activities that we're talking about in the amendment. We all lived within a good golf swing of each other, had for the last 20 years. But at those, sometimes there would be a beer or two, and we'd have sandwiches, and we'd talk, and we'd stay there. I guess, in retrospect, if this law was applicable back then, he was committing a misdemeanor, and maybe shouldn't have. We can talk about that. The question is, should he be thrown in jail for a felony if I walk out to the house that has always been only one block away and trip and fall? Or, as somebody was using, wrestle with somebody else and they have a serious physical injury? I'm not sure that, somebody said, well, if they're doing something wrong already, what's wrong with cranking it up to a felony?
Well, because that's the whole reason we have gradations in the criminal law, gradations of conduct, so that you can say, we do want to tell you that it was inappropriate, even though they're 20 and even though all the protections you took. And so we may keep that misdemeanor in. But are you sure you want to make it a felony? If something beyond his control with every precaution taken happens? I'm not so sure. I'm trying to put myself in the situation of Shannon coming back to me after college and with a friend, and we're having dinner, and if I allow those two to have a glass of wine. According to this law, that would be improper. We make an exception for your child, so we exempt them out of the law. But if their friend is there from college and they're sitting there, they're not driving, they're staying home, but I allow each of them to have a glass of wine. I guess we can continue to say that that's improper. We continue to say that that's a misdemeanor. But are you sure you want to make it a felony if, again, they trip? That's why the narrowing of the statute was important. But each of those cases that my friend from Fairbanks talked about, each of the cases I talked about here are knowingly providing. I'm not doing it with criminal negligence. I'm actually being given, in the case of me when I was young, or in the hypothetical with Shannon and a friend home from college, you're doing it. There are scarier ones. A wedding reception where there is a champagne punch, and somebody says in the midst of a big, busy day, I think some of those kids are getting in the punch. Well, I'm too busy to deal with it now. We've got everything going on. No, I think they are. That is providing with criminal negligence, maybe. Certainly a factual issue you can bring to a jury. And if anything happened to them, you committed a felony in that instance? The main problem I have, and one of the other speakers talked about it, usually we try and make the crime, the level of the crime, commensurate with some idea of how bad your mental state was. That is, how bad the thing you intended to do or the reckless action you took. We try and have it be proportional. So the worse your conduct, the higher up the scale of criminality it goes. The problem with this particular bill is it makes it a felony based on what happens outside of your control, what something else happens. So it was a misdemeanor to provide the glass of wine to Shannon's friend's home. It is a felony based on what happens later. The same act, dramatically different consequences depending on things outside of your control. Now, I'm not urging that we repeal the misdemeanor for this. I think it's problematic, but probably a good statement that we do. The only discussion we have here today is, exactly how sure are you that this should be a felony under these situations? The amendment we have narrows it to situations that I think it makes sense because it brings it back to the culpability of the person providing the alcohol. That is, if you're going to do it in any situation where driving or use of firearms or watercraft, I guess is the third, is possible, likely, then you are assuming a great risk of criminal prosecution on a felony standard. In the others, there's just too many weird circumstances that can happen. So I guess I'll sit down. But it's problematic even when you're knowingly doing it. But it's even more problematic because there can be ways. I didn't know I was providing. I didn't intend to provide. But a court could find you acted so negligently with regard to the wedding punch that you should have known that they were getting that minors were getting it. That you acted with criminal negligence as to whether they would get it. And that opens up an even more problematic whole area of felony prosecutions in this regard.
Are there any other admissions or confessions? Representative James and then Rockberg.
Just briefly, Mr. Speaker, because I've said so many times that the best part of being in the legislature is the debate, and I'm really enjoying this debate, although it is getting a little long. But one of the things that I, and listening to the debate, is the thoughts that have come to my mind is the real purpose of this bill, I believe, is to not have people give alcohol to young folks. And if you think of all the terrible things that has happened in the state when children are under the influence of alcohol and they can't get it themselves, somebody has to allow them to have it or they don't get it because they don't have the ability to buy it without identification. Or someone gave them illegal identification. So I also share that concern about making people into felons. It's a place I don't necessarily want to go, but when I sit here and I evaluate who these people are, in most cases that are going to be doing this, do I think they should be treated pretty strongly? I do, because there are even young people who leave. Doesn't say that if they lose their own life necessarily. It's happening to someone else, and I know that that happens a lot of times. So I've kind of been convinced by the arguments as to how I'm going to vote on this bill.
Representative James, Representative Whitaker, and then Rupert.
Mr. Speaker, I have been enlightened, and criminal negligence being the lowest bar is enlightening to me. But nonetheless, it remains a bar. I don't want to be stuck on this bar issue, but it is a bar that has to be overcome. One of the things that concerns me as we have these debates is that we have a tendency to focus on the improbable. I think it's highly improbable that an individual who has a wedding and a couple of kids have a drink or two of the champagne punch and then something terrible happens. I find it highly improbable that the individual who wasn't aware that that punch pilfering was occurring, did occur, would then be charged because he or she was criminally negligent. I don't think that's probable. I think it's amazingly improbable that that would occur. And so I think that we do ourselves a disservice if we focus on the improbable rather than the probable. And the probable is this, that if you provide alcohol to minors in a criminally negligent manner, and if those minors, or that minor, as the case may be, then causes serious injury or death, then you should probably be charged with a felony. And I speak against the amendment. I think we've done a relatively good job with this bill, and I'll sit down after that.
Representative Whitaker. Representative Rookberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess you could call this amendment the bad luck amendment. Well, I provided alcohol, I furnished it to a minor, and it was my bad luck that that minor went out and negligently, while intoxicated, seriously injured. And I thank the minority leader for reading everyone the statutory definition of that, or killed someone. Mr. Speaker, we've had some discussion. I appreciate the member from downtown Anchorage. He's very eloquent, but I think he speaks better than his knowledge of the law sometimes, because the examples he gave today on the floor are all absolutely wrong. However, I would say this. I perhaps would grant him the honor of hiring him as a great defense attorney. So with this, let me just say, what we're talking about here is criminal negligence. We're talking about mens rea, or the guilty mind at the criminal bar. He was talking about the champagne punch at a wedding. I would venture to say that that clearly does not generate a criminally negligent act, even statutorily. But I'd venture to say most of the judges in the state probably will default to law school, where they took their little red criminal law horn book and learned about mens rea and culpable mental state. You have to have a culpable mental state to do this. It has to be in criminal intent. You are giving that away to a minor. That is a crime. That's a criminal act. The member from downtown said a person would walk, you give him a drink and he walks and he trips and falls. Well, that's not a serious injury. As the minority leader mentioned, there has to be a protracted, serious problem with your physical being or death. The member from downtown said, if I gave them a glass of wine, wrong. They have to be intoxicated or under the influence. It takes more than a glass of wine to influence somebody. Mr. Speaker, I think this bill is fine as it is. I think the problems that everybody's really concerned about here is if they find themselves in the shoes of somebody that might be committing a criminal act, and I can appreciate that. It makes them very uncomfortable. We're all sitting here in our seats squirming about how perhaps we might have even broken the law unintentionally or intentionally. But this requires criminal negligence and an act of criminal intent. So the person who receives that alcohol then creates another negligent act under the influence that seriously injures somebody. There's enough sideboards and safeguards here and hurdles, so I think the courts will appreciate the circumstances that might fit unique fact patterns. I would vote against this. Thank you.
Representative Rookberg. Representative Cotulla.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having practiced criminal law for 5 years and having seen some circumstances that I never would have suspected could have arisen, much less have been charged, I just need to say that the wedding reception example is precisely why we need this amendment. Criminal negligence is almost next to no thought at all. There are standards, mens reas, of what you have to go through thinking in the law. You have an intentional standard, when somebody intends to do something. You have a knowing standard, the second one, which is just you sort of know it's going to happen. Then you get down to reckless behavior, and then you get to the bottom, which is criminal negligence, which, as the minority leader read, is a failure to perceive. Under that kind of a minimal standard, you can put that alcoholic punch out. You've got kids around. You know, put it together. You're failing to perceive that risk. And that's it. And things like that, I'm here to tell you, they get charged. So it is no argument to say that that can't happen. It absolutely can. Mr. Speaker, it's a hallmark of our criminal law system, and I know that you believe in it as much as I do, that you have a right to understand the law before you're charged. We've got enough information in our packet that leads me to believe that this law will be challenged, we'll have problems with it, we may lose cases under it, and none of us want that. I wanted to vote for this bill yesterday. After listening to the arguments, I realized in good faith I couldn't because I could see it under attack. The amendment clarifies that the behavior that the next person does is serious enough that I think that we've provided a great deal of protection with the amendment, and I would really encourage you to vote for it. This is a serious thing. It's against the law to provide alcohol to minors. We should take this seriously. We should pass a law that's going to be upheld and mean something. So I really appreciate the opportunity to speak. I really recognize the concerns and believe that people wholeheartedly want to put a good law into place. But don't kid yourself. You don't want to make it overbroad. You will see odd circumstances, and you'll see the law challenged. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Sisson.
Mr. Speaker, I believe that this body is not as representative of the people of the state as would be needed. To really understand just how very, very prevalent the use of alcohol is throughout Alaska. And we make law after law that includes alcohol and enforcement of not using alcohol. And yet the people in Alaska, we have the highest incidence of alcoholism in the country. And if it was up to me, we would put alcohol right in the same category as all of the other drugs that we think are abhorrent. But alcohol is what it is used so prevalently in the state. And if in fact we're going to really put this kind of it's fine with me in one sense, but I don't represent Alaska at all. And I don't even fit in the alcohol use of most of the people in this body, I think, because I use it so very rarely. I think this bill actually fits me, but I don't think it fits the state. So I think this amendment's a good one, and I hope that the body actually gets serious about alcohol use and actually puts in more educational programs to get people to realize how dangerous it is. Thank you.
Representative Sisson. Having resisted the impulse to make judgment on criminal law and admissibility of evidence, is there any other discussion? Seeing none, question before the body is amendment number one. As amended, members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Wilson from 80A. Any other member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
27 yeas, 10 nays.
And so, amendment number one, as amended, has passed the House. That brings the bill back before us under reconsideration. Is there discussion?
Question.
Representative Davies.
Just very briefly, I want to say that I'm changing my vote now to support the bill because I believe the bill has been significantly improved. Thank you.
Representative Davies, any other discussion? Motion before the body is under reconsideration. Shall CS for HB 330 Finance pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Would the clerk please lock the roll? Would any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
36 yeas, 1 nay.
And so, committee substitute for HB 330 Finance, amended under reconsideration, has passed the House. Would the clerk please read the next item?
There's citation on today's calendar.
Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. Brings us to unfinished business. Madam Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the following representatives be excused from a call of the House for the following times. Representative Jewell from 7 a.m. Thursday, April 4 to 7 p.m. Plain Time, Sunday, April 7. Representative Kukesh from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, April 5th. Representative Morgan from 2:05 p.m. Tuesday, April 16 to 9:35 p.m. Plain Time, Thursday, April 18. Representative Williams from 1:35 p.m. Friday, April 5. To 9:45 p.m. Plain Time, Sunday, April 7, and Representative Wilson from 8:15 p.m. Friday, April 12, to 6:16 p.m. Plain Time, Sunday, April 14.
Without objection, those members will be shown as excused on the dates and times indicated by the Majority Leader. And also under unfinished business, CS for HB 443, Labor and Commerce, Tattooing and Body Piercing, has picked up an irritation. That being in the form of a fiscal note, and consequently, it will be referred to the Finance Committee. Do we have any other items of unfinished business? Seeing none, committee announcements. Representative Masick and then Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Resource Committee will be meeting at 1 o'clock today, and I ask that all members that are on the committee to please be there. Thank you.
Representative Masick. Representative Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today in House Finance, we had scheduled House Bill 182, Motor Vehicle Sales and Dealers. We'll hold that for another day. And the Supplemental Appropriation Fast Track will be held for another day also. We will hear House Bill 503. And for tomorrow, we're going to hold Senate resolution, concurrent resolution, joint Legislative Salmon Industry Task Force. We'll hold that till for another day also. Thank you.
Representative Williams. Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tomorrow's meeting of the Community and Regional Affairs is canceled. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any other committee announcements? Representative Coghill and then Rockford.
Thank you very much. The State Affairs Committee meeting tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock will bring up the fireworks bill from the member from the Valley first on the calendar. It's not listed in here.
Representative Coghill. Representative Rookberg.
Well, Mr. Chairman, at 1 o'clock, the Judiciary Committee will be having another pre-hearing on a bill before we bring it to the floor. Thank you.
Representative Rookberg. Touche. Any other committee announcements? Representative Scalzi.
Yeah, one further note, Mr. Speaker, on resources. There are four of us leaving for Kodiak. Three of us leaving today. One has already left. That leaves five for a quorum. Thank you. But I would urge all members to please attend and if for some unknown reason you can't make it, please notify the co-chair, Masick. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scalzi. Any other committee announcements? Regular announcements? Special orders. Madam Majority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citation on the member's desk honoring Brigadier General Douglas M. Fraser be taken up as a special order of business at this time.
Without objection, we have that citation before us. Madam Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the special order citation be approved.
Without objection, the special order citation for General Fraser has been adopted. Any other special orders? Representative McGuire.
Permission to speak on the Judiciary Chairman.
Without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to take a moment to publicly thank the Chairman of Judiciary for allowing the latitude that he did today for the members of this body to vote in good conscience and to do some hard work on a bill. I know he spent many hours working on the bill, and I just want to thank him for that latitude and thank him for his work on Judiciary. I think he does a good job.
Thank you, Madam. Representative McGuire. Representative Rookberg.
Mr. Speaker, I'd ask permission to speak on the subject of fear tactics.
Without objection.
Mr. Speaker, a little background. I introduced a House bill, House Bill 290, to reform the method of assessment of the CHIA. That's the Alaska Comprehensive Health Assurance Association. It's our insurance of last resort in the state. There's approximately 400 members that people of the state that can't get insurance elsewhere, and they pay a high premium. And we have this as part of the HIPAA program that we have to keep our primacy of state regulation. It's a very important program, Mr. Speaker. But now approximately 65,000 people or covered lives in the state of Alaska pay, these are the people with individual small business insurance, they pay $3 million a year in special assessments to keep this program alive. And, Mr. Speaker, I think it is time for reform, particularly since the state has withdrawn its support for this and the escalating health care costs that all of us are feeling. It's really becoming a burden, particularly for that small element of society that's paying for this. And many states have chosen to spread the risk over more covered lives by assessing stop-loss coverage for exempt ERISA groups, like self-insured groups and so forth. And we brought forth a bill that actually spreads it from over 260,000 lives here in Alaska. And that, we figured it costs about 96 cents a month or $12 a year per person. But organized labor has opposed the bill, and I think that's their right. There's some in. But my concern, Mr. Speaker, is that some in organized labor have indulged in spreading what I would call disinformation and mischaracterized the bill to their own membership. And this really came to a head yesterday, Mr. Speaker. A retired labor union member left a name and phone number on my answering machine in Anchorage, and my wife returned the call. Mr. Speaker, the man ran into a rave about stealing his pension and then had the temerity to say that you should be worried about his safety and your family. And my wife asked him, well, is this a threat? He says, no, I don't wish any harm, but the labor union will take care of this. Mr. Speaker, my wife is scared and she's really frightened. You know, that's one of the problems that when we come down here, that we're separated, many of us, from our families. We're not there to comfort them and look after their needs. But I checked with security, and then having left his number, I called this person back. And after a conversation with him, I concluded really that this was a troubled, misinformed drunk, basically, and not really a threat. But you know, my wife is not convinced, and I don't blame her. And she's scared. Mr. Speaker, it's really a sad day when a member, you know, has to receive veiled threats over their family and themselves. You know, this really has a chilling effect in our deliberations and even our First Amendment rights. It's not right, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd also take note that we've had some shock ads directed at the member of downtown Anchorage here recently in the newspaper. You know, I may disagree with that member's position on taxation, but I stand to defend his right to advocate that. You know, we must have full and complete debate in here. And, you know, we deserve to be free from fear when we talk about things, when we deliberate things, when we debate these issues. It's very important, Mr. Speaker. And therefore, I really condemn those ads. I condemn intemperate threats to any of us. Mr. Speaker, I've talked to the representatives of the labor union, and they have repudiated any threats to my family. And I want to thank them for that. And Mr. Speaker, in conclusion, I would say that, you know, I understand the meaning of that Trumanism. You know, if you can't stand the heat, you got to get out of the kitchen. You know, but however, you know, I strongly condemn the tactics of threats and disinformation. And I ask you, my colleagues here, to have the strength to stand by your convictions, but leave my family alone.
Representative Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the same topic.
Without objection.
I also stand declare it's not a conflict, but it's a fact. I am a member of a labor union. I think I've stated that on this floor a number of times. And I do also condemn the act of any individual member of society who would threaten somebody else's life or either as a drunk or whatever, however they might do it. It's not right. All of us are human beings, and we all have sensitive feelings and that sort of thing. I just want to clarify, and I'm glad the previous speaker did, labor unions themselves also condemn this action, and to be painted in any way as being a part of this, I hope would be wrong. It's certainly wrong from the union I represent, or I'm a member of, not represented here, but as a member of it, and I think of all other unions, I would hope. I think we all have to go on record, or should go on record, of condemning these kind of activities or actions by anybody, and we all know what the difficulties are. I certainly do with the Health and Social Services budget of the actions that people take under the influence of alcohol or other drugs. And again, Mr. Speaker, I want to go on record of totally opposing this kind of action, and my sympathy to the representative from District 11's wife and for any fear that she may have or her family may have over this type of activity.
Thank you, Representative Harris. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To speak on the prior subject.
Without objection.
I also condemn this behavior. Even though this man was a union member, he speaks for not me as a union member, nor any other union member that I know of in this state. It was a reprehensible act, and I apologize for myself and for other union members to the member from District 11. I'm sorry that it happened.
Thank you, Representative Crawford. Any other special orders? Madam Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. Thursday, April 4.
See you tomorrow.